Thanks, Natalie.
Good afternoon, everybody. I don't know if this is working, so I might just put that down.
I might have to turn it on, Dave.
Oh, no. Sorry. No, I got it. Fantastic. Okay. Quick housekeeping. Talkback forms. Make sure you have those out. Pen. Please have one of those out. Zing. If you don't have one, raise your hand so we can get one to you right now. While we're looking that up, I just want to quickly point out to you that this is the last talk in this series. So if you want to know what's happening next week, there's a little table for you at the very back of the book. And this tells you where we've come from and where we're heading to. Next week, Wise Leadership, Mr. Rob Eldar is going to be speaking on wise leadership. Back page, nice little snazzy little image there. So bring your friends along. Wise Leadership coming up next week. But for now, growing in wisdom through failure. And please, if you've got any questions, write them down on your talkback form, your name, your phone number or email. And more importantly, make sure you write legibly. I think that's the most important thing. That's not going to go for me. I don't want to die. Cool. Okay. Question was, have you ever made a good impression on somebody? Ever made a good impression on somebody? You want to be a memorable person. Okay. You want to be remembered, particularly if you want to get a favour. So, you know, perhaps a good example of when you want to make a good impression is when you go on your first date, okay, going on a date with somebody, a girl or a guy, and you put in extra effort to look nice, have a shower maybe, have a shave if you're a guy, smell a bit nice, buy some new clothes, you know, look nice, be on your best behaviour, be all bubbly and nice, to make that person really like you. You want that person to like you, you want to be memorable, so you can get on the second date. Kyle Sandilands, that's the guy on the left there. Isn't that Kyle Sandilands? Yeah? Yeah. Radio disc jockey. I'm surprised if you didn't know him. He's quite loud. Current radio presenter with Jackie on Kiss FM. I think he's still there, is he? I don't know. I don't listen to very often, but I think he was. Okay. And former Australian Idol and X Factor judge, if you watch those shows. Okay. Before he made it big with being a radio jockey, he had a record of failures in jobs. He was retrenched, okay, from a meatworks factory. Then he got let go from an electronics company for stealing some money. And then he got fired from Cadbury's after sharing his fuel card with his mates. Okay? So he's obviously, you know, trying to get ahead in life, by impressing people, you know, stealing money maybe for someone else or sharing his fuel card or whatever. You know, he wants to be a memorable guy, but you know, he's obviously wasn't a guy that was worth keeping on. And so his auntie, suggests that he apply for a job with a local radio station in Townsville. Anyone know where Townsville is? North Queensland, okay? Top of North Queensland. To get a job, okay, there, you have to be really impressive with the radio station, okay? So what does he do? He faked a resume by saying that he worked at Triple M Queensland, Brisbane. He faked a resume and said he worked at Triple M Brisbane, okay? And that obviously left a really good impression on the person he was interviewing with. His future employer eventually got work experience there at the radio station and then got an on-air job there. And then he got this job, basically. So basically, he lied to make a good impression. So how far would you go to make that first good impression on somebody? How far would you go? And for what reasons would you do that? So at the end of last week, from the story from we read in Genesis 39, Joseph was thrown into prison because he was accused of seducing his Egyptian master's wife. And so to say that you're in prison isn't a very impressive thing at all, is it? In fact, we could say that Joseph has actually hit rock bottom. He's actually hit rock bottom. And Joseph, he's desperate to get out of this mess, to get out of prison. You know, his failure in the way that he spoke to his brothers in the first week, and then his failure in being overconfident and proud as a ruler of Potiphar's household last week, has led him into this Egyptian prison. How much more does Joseph have to fail to then become a wise person? Is the answer to be more impressive so that he can be a more memorable person among people? Because you arrive at Genesis 41, that's what we read today, that's what Nat read today, and we see Joseph speaking to the king of Egypt directly, who then promotes him later from being in prison to being in this amazing position of power in the country. He gets to become the ruler of Pharaoh's house and over the land of Egypt. What does Joseph do to impress Pharaoh? Does he make himself more memorable somehow or more appealing? Yeah, for Joseph to get to this point here, he's gone through so much failure in his life, but he's also grown through so much wisdom. So I want to highlight today that from Joseph's experience here, from his story, we should know that God is in control even when we try to impress people and it fails to guarantee our success. And so we have printed here chapter 40, which is on the left page there, under week 8, for us to refer to. I'm going to refer to that a fair bit today, because obviously reading all that's a bit long. So I want to refer to Genesis 40 here. And just to help us understand how Joseph learns from his failures here today. So like last week, to help us understand how Joseph grows in wisdom from his failures, we're first going to look at who is Joseph from this passage. And so the first thing I want to say about Joseph is that he's a person who is an interpreter of dreams who trusts God. He's a person who is an interpreter of dreams who trusts God. As we read in chapter 41 today, Pharaoh summons Joseph to interpret his troubling dreams. And so Joseph only gets this opportunity to interpret the dreams because he's being referred to by this guy called the cupbearer in verse 12. Although he must not have been memorable, or that memorable, Joseph is, because his name is not even mentioned, he's only referred to as the young Hebrew. So Joseph's referral happens because the cupbearer has had personal experience with Joseph interpreting his dreams. So let's go back 2 years before, let's jump in the time machine, 2 years back into chapter 40, to see how Joseph behaved when he interpreted those dreams. Joseph's in prison, okay, 2 years before this. He's been accused of sleeping with the captain of the guard's wife. You know, if the accusations were true, although if you followed on from chapter 39, we know that they're false, okay? And so Joseph, if they were true, Joseph would be dead right now. He wouldn't be alive. But regardless of whether it was true or not, it makes his master angry, offends his master, and Joseph's thrown into prison, as we see in chapter 40. And while he's in prison, he meets two people, the cupbearer and the chief baker, who have both offended their master, Pharaoh. Both these guys had a responsibility of serving food to their master, which means they need to be prepared to a certain level of quality, but also they need to eat it or try it to make sure that they weren't feeding Pharaoh poison. But we're not told what they did to deserve their punishment of being thrown into prison. We're only told that Joseph is assigned to take care of these two guys, and he finds out that they're sad because they've had dreams that no one can interpret. So now Joseph, you know, for Joseph, dreams, you know, they're not new things for him. You know, these things that he has in his mind, these messages that he's getting, they're not foreign things to him or to his family. Because back in our first talk for this series in Genesis 37, his brothers interpret the dreams. His father also had dreams and interprets them too. So it runs in the family, okay? And so look at me in verse 8 of chapter 40 here, which says this. He says to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." Now, this is a pretty bold statement for Joseph to make to these two guys, right? To these two foreigners, particularly being a follower of God. You know, Joseph is saying very confidently that he can interpret the dreams because God gives him the power to, gives him the interpretation for those dreams. And it's a similar kind of bold statement we saw last week where he stands up to Potiphar's wife by refusing to sleep with her because if he did, it went against, it would go against his way of living for God. So not only is this man trying to walk with God, he's trying to live under him, you know, whether he's the master of the household or he's the master of the prison, but in saying that God gives him the gift to interpret these dreams is a very bold statement. And so both the cupbearer and then the chief baker tell their dreams to Joseph. And he reveals to them what their fate would be in 3 days. So have a look in verse 21, in your zine, verse 21, about what would happen to these guys from their dreams. It says, he, being Pharaoh, restored the chief cupbearer to his position so that he once again put the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but then he impaled the chief baker, just as Joseph had said to them in his interpretation. So we see that the cupbearer is restored into Pharaoh's service, alive, while the baker is killed. And we see here that this is an amazing gift that God has given Joseph. It's impressive to be able to interpret a dream or dreams and then for them to become true. It's not something you can easily bake on a resume, okay? You can't do that. And you know, you might have a special skill or talent given by God to you, and the opportunity comes up for you to kind of move up in the world, to be impressive, by impressing someone. You know, you might be in a tutorial class, and you could be that person, you know, constantly participating in class, asking questions, answering questions, because you want to impress the lecturer. You want to impress the tutorer, and you also want to impress your classmates. You might have an opportunity to get an internship or a cadetship or even a grad job. You need to impress the person, the employer, who's hiring you for that company. So you want to show them that you're the right personality. You have the right uni grades to back that up, because you know that will impress them. And we want to impress because we want to succeed in life. We want to get ahead. We want to be memorable in people's minds because we think it will help us in life. And Joseph, knowing that the cupbearer and the chief baker once worked for this big guy, this big honcho Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, he thinks he can get a leg up in life by impressing this guy so that he can get out of this filthy prison. And we think the same as him. We think the same thing. And I think this is where Joseph fails, particularly towards God. Even when he's hit rock bottom in a prison, he uses his God-given gift to advance his own position. Have a look at me at what he says to the cupbearer in verse 14 here. In verse 14, look it up. It says, "But when all goes with you," as in with the cupbearer, "remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison." It's kind of the attitude of, you know, I've done something for you, So now you've got to help me out here. You've got to return the favour. You know, he treats his gift, his God-given gift, as a bartering tool, something to be used to earn favours from people. And his own efforts to advance himself to get him out of prison, it doesn't work. Because if you look in verse 23, it says that the cupbearer doesn't even remember Joseph. Joseph fails to be memorable. The point of this isn't about the outcome, okay? It's about Joseph's attitude in using his God-given gifts to fulfill whatever God's plans are for his life in the future. I wonder if this is the same for you, the same thing that we do, that we've been given these amazing skills, amazing gifts by God to do amazing things, but we only focus on the results and not think about fulfilling or considering God's plans. Now, how do you keep in mind that God has given you amazing gifts and amazing skills? And when you use them, you don't necessarily get what you want and you get frustrated. How can you continue to use your gifts but also trust in God with whatever outcome happens? So this flies on to the second thing we learn about Joseph here today, is that he thinks he's a prisoner who's been wronged in life. Now, Joseph, you know, he's trying to be memorable by interpreting the cupbearer's dream, but he tries to get them to sympathise with his situation in verse 15 of chapter 40. So have a look with me in verse 15. He says this, He says, I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon. You want to feel for Joseph, don't you? You know, he's been failed by his brothers for being sold into slavery. He's been failed by Potiphar because he's been unjustly imprisoned. It kind of pulls at your heartstrings a bit, doesn't it, that he's been so treated badly. But has Joseph always been the victim in these scenarios? Or is he actually partly responsible for where he's ended up today? You know, I tried to illustrate over the last 2 weeks how much Joseph has had a part to play in his own failures, right? And so firstly, the way that he speaks to his brothers. Secondly, the overconfident nature, the pride that he has in his position of power with Potiphar. So for him to say, I've done nothing to deserve being put in a dungeon, okay, is that a completely true statement? Is that a completely true statement? I don't think so. So here, Joseph fails again because he thinks he's a prisoner who's been wronged in life. But the reality is that he's made some poor decisions, okay, that he's actually responsible for, which have contributed to his life's failures. Joseph's failures in his life, which include his attitude towards his God-given gifts, an incorrect understanding that he's completely the victim, they lay a foundation for his success with Pharaoh in this chapter today, in chapter 41. So now we're going to look at chapter 41, particularly how Joseph grows in his wisdom here. The first thing I want to highlight to you as a point of growth is that Joseph has learned to surrender his life and purpose to God. And this shows in the way he interprets Pharaoh's dream. We read chapter 41, we've read it just today, and we get the impression that Joseph has been kind of forgotten. Like he's not even made a mention of until verse number 14, down the very bottom of the right-hand page. Where is he, kind of thing? You know, what is he going to be remembered? And we only get a mention of him because he's summoned out of the dungeon. And so Joseph most likely didn't know that he was going to be remembered or be memorable or recommended for his dream interpreting skills to Pharaoh. So in verse 16, Joseph is brought before Pharaoh to interpret his dream. And these are the words that come out of his mouth to Pharaoh. The first words we see in this chapter come out of his mouth to Pharaoh. Look at them with me. It says this. It says, I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. This is coming from a guy who's got nothing left to lose. He's just been living in a prison for over 2 years in terrible conditions. He looks terrible. And so he recognises he has no power of influence with anybody outside of prison. And so Joseph's approach here is that, you know, he directly and humbly says that the God of the universe provides him the dream interpretations. And he also challenges Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, that he's not a god. And that Joseph's God will give Pharaoh the answers he's looking for. Even in the interpretation of Pharaoh's dream in verses 28 to 32, later on, Joseph bookends the interpretation by saying that God has showed, God has decided, and God will do to Pharaoh what God has planned. That's a lot of God there, isn't there? And what we see is different to what we saw in the cupbearer baker episode in chapter 40, where Joseph has grown in wisdom by applying his God-given gifts while humbly acknowledging God and not directly kind of asking for favours or something in return for his efforts to influence people or get a particular outcome. And this is because Joseph has surrendered his life, truly surrendered his life, his skills and his gift to God. And so this is the thing that Pharaoh finds most impressive about Joseph, okay? That's the right text. Missing a slide. That's all right. Okay. This is the thing he finds most impressive about Joseph, that Joseph is a follower of God that has used his gifts, his God-given gifts, for Pharaoh's service. Okay, if you've got a Bible there, you can look on. So it's not printed here for you. It's meant to come up on the screen. But I'll read it to you in verse 38. It says this. Pharaoh says, "Can we find anyone like this man, like Joseph, one in whom is the Spirit of God? God has made all this known to you. There is no one so discerning and wise as you." You know, we can also see how this practically works out in the way Joseph speaks sensitively to Pharaoh, which also is a kind of sign of growth in his wisdom. So in verse 15, Pharaoh admits to Joseph that, you know, he's made personal efforts, personal investigations, and to find someone to interpret his dreams, okay? But he fails to find someone to do it. And so we see in verse 16 that Joseph, he's not quick to point out that Pharaoh made a stupid mistake for asking those wise men and those magicians for an interpretation, or that those wise men and magicians, you know, they're just incompetent and incapable of ever interpreting dreams. Instead, Joseph simply just acknowledges God for the skill that he has and humbly and obediently does what he's asked to do in a sensitive way. You know, what we see here in this story is different to when he was with his brothers, okay, where Joseph has grown in wisdom by being very slow to point out people's errors and failings. And we don't see him do that here, mentioning anything like that here, mentioning any fault or anything evil, anything bad. Joseph's attitude here and speech is so impressive to Pharaoh that he gets promoted to be the master of Pharaoh's household as a ruler of the Egyptian land. Now, this would have been beyond Joseph's wildest dreams, okay? His craziest dreams. I don't think he would have been expected to be the ruler of the Egyptian land, really. But we've already seen some kind of clues that Joseph would end up here. You may remember back in chapter 37, flip back if you need to chapter 37, and we see Joseph also having two dreams, okay? Just like Pharaoh did in this chapter. The first dream was about sheaves of grain. And coincidentally, Pharaoh, he also has two dreams, one being about grain as well. And we learn from the end of chapter 41 that the grain is to do with the 7 years of famine that will come upon Egypt. Joseph, who was in a foreign land under a foreign master, will have a very important role in God's plan of storing up grain for preserving not only Egypt, the Egyptian people, but also God's people through his severe famine. And we see this parallel with God's spiritual provision through Jesus, who sustains us eternally. Where Jesus, and I want to read to you from John 6, where Jesus says this, he says, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry. And whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." Friends, this is the ultimate plan of God, right? The ultimate plan of God. Put in place for those who are just sick of trying to live up to a standard, or trying to living life impressing people, or even trying to impress God. You know, through Jesus, we're 100% assured that through him, we are eternally provided for. If we turn to Jesus and trust in him, then we can be confident that in eternity, we won't be hungry, that we won't be thirsty, won't be ever longing ever again. So today we see the extent Joseph was willing to go to impress people and to be memorable by using his God-given gifts to guarantee his own success. But we also see another side of Joseph, right? Which saw him completely kind of surrendering his life to God, surrendering his purpose to God, which showed in the way that he spoke with Pharaoh. Although today Joseph achieves a positive outcome, okay, he succeeds by being this ruler of Egypt after interpreting Pharaoh's dreams. His life before this had descended rock bottom into prison after some serious failures. And so regardless of the outcome, we need to remember that God is in control even when we try to impress people, and even if it fails to guarantee our success. I think we need to kind of adapt an attitude of, of surrendering our life and purpose to God, because He's the one who's provided every gift and skill we have today. It's not necessarily for the purpose of creating our success all the time, but more about what fulfilling whatever God has planned for us in the future. You know, I personally know within myself that I'm always trying to impress people. You know, with my personality, with my good looks maybe, my humour, okay, my skills, because I want to be validated. I want to be accepted. I want to be liked. But is that the only purpose of my life? Or is there more we need to consider? What potentially is planned for us by God in the future? How to continue to use your gifts, but also trust in God, whatever the outcome is. If God's ultimate plan for you is to be eternally sustained and fulfilled spiritually through Jesus, who is the bread of life, how does that change the way you use your gifts and your skills today? Friends, remember that God is in control when we try to impress people, even when it fails to guarantee our success.